Hi, and welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, your host, and I'm really glad you've decided to join us today. Tomorrow will mark a pretty grim one-year anniversary on the planet. It will be a year since Russia decided to invade Ukraine following Vladimir Putin's annexation of the Ukraine's Crimean Peninsula back in 2014. Now, when this occurred last year, it seemed almost unthinkable. A land war in Europe. Many thought this was exactly what the European Union and NATO were created to prevent. And still, when Russian President Putin did invade and attempt to take Kyiv almost a full year ago, for many it seemed like a foregone conclusion that Russia would succeed. Ukraine has one-tenth of Russia's GDP and less than one-third of its population. This was an epic mismatch, at least on paper, from the beginning. And still, Ukraine has been able to repel Russia from its capital and continues to fight to this day to maintain its independence. In a surprise move, President Joe Biden traveled to Ukraine on Monday as part of a three-day diplomatic trip where he pledged continued support for the country.
We know that there'll be very difficult days and weeks and years ahead. But Russia's aim was to wipe Ukraine off the map. Putin's war of conquest is failing. You and all Ukrainians, Mr. President, remind the world every single day what the meaning of the word courage is. Remind us that freedom is priceless. It's worth fighting for as long as it takes. And that's how long we're going to be with you, Mr. President, for as long as it takes.
Okay, so a real show of force by our president going to the region close to the date of the anniversary and talking pretty tough about our resolve. President Putin had his own show of strength this week, though. He met with China's top diplomat at the Kremlin while also stating that Russia is going to be, quote, suspending its participation with the last remaining nuclear arms treaty between our country and theirs that was set to expire in 2026. This occurred as U.S. intelligence suggests China is really considering providing arms and ammunition to Russia, which would really escalate the tensions between the United States, of course, and Russia. While Ukraine has relied on America and Western assistance with lethal aid, Russia has looked to countries like China and Iran to avoid the effects that economic sanctions have had on their ability to produce weapons and munitions that they need for the war. So, 1 year in, where do we stand in this land war between Russia and Ukraine in Europe? How have things changed for all of the parties involved? Is it possible for Ukraine to prevail and retake its independence and its territory? Or does U.S. support of the country risk uniting two of our biggest geopolitical rivals in China and Russia? And how would that affect us here in America? These are questions swirling all around this one-year anniversary of Russia's invasion. A little later, we're going to take a look at how the war continues to affect Ukrainians in America, as well as whether or not sanctions should be used in this conflict to put pressure on Russia. But first, we're joined by Vox senior foreign policy writer Jonathan Geyer, who recently wrote about this conflict. Jonathan, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Good morning, Stephen.
So catch us up. Where are we now? Almost a year to the day from Russia's attempt to take Kyiv and occupy Ukraine.
Well, I think you've really summed it up. We were all shocked by the immense bravery and strength of Ukrainians. And a year later, it's sort of miraculous, but Ukraine and Russia are at a semi-stalemate. And that's in large thanks due to the almost $30 billion of weapons the United States has sent Ukraine, the huge support the United States and NATO has provided, the kind of major mess ups on the Russian military side. And I think all of this was on display this week in these kind of split screen speeches. You had President Joe Biden giving a huge rally in Warsaw, Poland, thousands of people, kind of funky Eurotrash music playing. He frames this war as a fight between democracy and autocracy. And then you had Vladimir Putin giving a rambling two-hour speech in Moscow, pulling out of, you know, the last diplomatic agreement, the nuclear agreement, the New START between the United States and Russia, which kind of reminds everybody that the stakes of this war are not just about the future of Ukraine, but actually about the future of the world. And we're returning to this moment where nuclear powers are really on edge. So each side is doubling down a year on. And unfortunately, tragically, especially for the people of Ukraine, for Russians living under Russian tyranny, and for everyone else being affected by energy prices, food prices, all these really negative effects of the war, the war has no end in sight, unfortunately.
Yeah, you wrote that this week. But also, there is this question about China, which kind of lurks in the background of this. And the United States, of course, believes that China has been providing some non-lethal aid to Russia already. And the rhetoric around this suggests that that could escalate and maybe soon. Talk about why that enhances the tensions here and why we should be more concerned about China getting involved.
You put your finger on the biggest issue here, which is everyone in the national security community in Washington is worried about China as a threat in the long term. And the Russia war right now has sort of become a sideshow to this. It's sapping U.S. weapons, U.S. supply chain, U.S. diplomatic energy. But really, everyone's focused on how to counter China's global influence. And, you know, going back to Richard Nixon, U.S. policy has been just make sure that Russia and China are not on the same side. And frankly, I think President Xi of China has looked at this invasion for Russia. It's gone pretty badly, though he has maintained contact with Russia and hasn't condemned it. The Chinese have not really publicly condemned the Russian invasion of Ukraine. You know, there still is some partnership. There is, as the State Department suggested this week, perhaps some weapons. We haven't seen that intelligence. So I think that's going to be a big focus right now, because there are, I think, somewhat unfounded fears, but there are real fears about China watching what's going on and saying, should we invade Taiwan or not? And I think the U.S. really needs to make some smart choices on how to deter China, lest, you know, there be another global conflict in the midst.
I'm talking with Jonathan Geyer. He covers foreign policy, national security, and global affairs for Vox. He's been writing a lot about the Russian invasion of Ukraine, which celebrates a pretty macabre one-year anniversary tomorrow. President Biden was in the region this week, kind of flexing a little bit of U.S. muscle, saying that we would do what needed to be done to protect Ukraine and that we would be with them as long as they needed us. President Vladimir Putin also showing some strength this week, talking about an alliance with China that he hopes will grow in order to help the Russians a little more in their effort. We want to hear from you during this conversation as well. Are you somebody who has been personally affected by the war in Ukraine? This is, of course, a part of the world where we have many folks from that part of the world, either people who have come recently or people who have been here a really long time. Tell us your story. Tell us what's happening to relatives or friends that you still have in the Ukraine and in that region. Also, give us a sense if you're someone who supports the American and the Western effort to support Ukraine. Do you think we should be doing what we're doing? Do you think we should be doing more? Do you think we should be giving direct military aid to Ukraine or more of it? Are you someone on the other side who maybe thinks this is something we ought to stay out of, that this is about that region and not about us. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can work you into the conversation that way. Jonathan, I wonder what you imagine the solution here is and how it will be reached. Is this something that is going to just have to be fought out until one side literally loses? Or is there a diplomatic solution that could take hold of both sides and let everybody kind of save maybe a little face as the Russians maybe exit Ukraine?
There will need to be negotiations at some point. Neither side, the Russians nor the Ukrainians, are ready for that. But, you know, diplomats tell me it takes time to table set for negotiations. It can take months and years. So I would really hope that the Biden administration and European partners and allies are already kind of setting up the contours of what a diplomatic agreement would look like. But the three things I'll be watching for, Stephen, are the extent to which war fatigue is going to affect the way Americans like you and me think about the war. We have House Republicans that are really rallying against increased billions of dollars of aid for Ukraine. So the way Americans perceive this war is going to be really important into the framework of how it ends. I'm also really concerned about how brazen and risky Vladimir Putin's willing to be. I mean, pulling out of a nuclear agreement is very escalatory. I don't think he is going to use nuclear weapons in the short term, but just even a small risk of that is a big deal. Mm-hmm. And to your point, I think the third thing to think about is, what does winning look like for Ukraine? I mean, they've clearly in this past year won to some extent, strategically exposing Russia to defeat on some level. But if you're Ukrainian, you know, your energy infrastructure is being attacked right now. It is a huge tragedy for my friends who are journalists who've been reporting from there, incredibly brave, telling the stories of Ukrainians. So it's not clear what winning would look like for Ukraine. And those are the kind of questions diplomats will be thinking about as they start hashing out, you know, not even the negotiations, but the negotiations about what those negotiations might look like.
Right, right. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. Call and tell us what you make of the war in Ukraine 1 year into it. I want to start today with Dr. Olana Daniluk, who is the vice president of the Ukrainian American Civic Committee, Ukrainian American Crisis Response Committee of Metropolitan Detroit. She grew up in Western Ukraine and now lives here in Southeast Michigan. Dr. Daniluk, welcome to Detroit Today.
Good morning, and thank you so much for inviting me.
Sure. So tell us how the war is affecting Ukrainians here in Michigan on the eve of this one-year anniversary of the invasion. I can't imagine, if I had ties to that region, how tense this 12 months would have been and how worried I would be about the people I knew in that region. Give us a sense of how that's going.
I just want to remind that war started in 2014 because
right.
It's 1 year, it's a full escalation invasion. But in 2014, when Crimea was annexed and Eastern conflict started, when Russia really started invading Ukraine at that time. So since 2014, our community it's trying to, like, helping Ukraine and trying just to do everything possible here in the United States to protect Ukraine. But yes, from last February 24th, when full-scale invasion war broke up, we are, since that time, Ukrainian community is every single day trying to help, support, fight, advocate, bring to awareness and help in all capacity how we could just stop this war. And since that time, the organizations are trying to collect any aid, medical aid, supplies. We have, as you mentioned, Crisis Response Committee formed, which organized, like, all Ukrainian organizations here in Michigan and also in all countries those active groups were trying to coordinate our efforts for helping Ukraine. And it's very important that we have to advocate and properly bring necessary information. And all communities thankful, United States and people who helping us understand. And we understand that it's 1 year. It's not a short time.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's still, we don't see the end of this war. And us and Putin is encroaching in Ukraine, and he and his idea is to take over Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
And we understand that we, because we couldn't lose Ukraine, we couldn't let Ukraine like happen to be taken by Russia again, and you know, and destroy Ukrainian culture, Ukrainian identity.
Sure. So I want to have you address people who would respond to what you just said by saying this is the reason that America should maybe not be involved, that this is a really long-running conflict. There is not a clear solution to it. And for that reason, we ought to kind of pull back and stay out of it. What's the reason that you would say that's not the approach we should take?
As you know, that Ukraine is the largest country in Europe, and Ukraine also is one of the oldest European democracies. Like, with the first democratic constitution, branches of government, separation of church and state, is 77 years even before America is owned. So, and once when Ukraine reclaimed an independence in 1991, and with collapse of Soviet Union, United States declared that they won the Cold War, if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
And also Ukraine gave away all their nuclear weapon arsenal, and Ukraine was open to join European countries. And you also remember about Budapest Memorandum, yes, this unlucky Budapest Memorandum, when Ukraine was completely disarmed, and Ukrainian government were following up with rules and collaborational agreements between all countries to join democratic countries. And that's right now when Putin knew that Ukraine is completely disarmed,
mm-hmm.
that we were not able to fight back. And he also knows that during all those 30 years, he was trying to take over our factories, you know, just it was a lot of, specifically for when Yanukovych was as a president, that's where a lot of takeovers of infrastructures. So as so United States have an obligation to help Ukraine,
mm-hmm.
and to protect us, if you want to protect democracy in whole world.
Yeah.
Because as right now, Ukraine is protecting full world from full-scale Russian invasion for full world.
Yeah,
anticipating next countries would be falling down.
Can you also give us a sense of how people here in this region can help Ukrainians at this time? What if you're somebody who's concerned about the humanitarian crisis in the region in particular? What would you do?
So first, because a lot of relatives and families are displaced, so we would be creating, Michigan should create a more welcoming program for Ukrainian parolees. Because as you know, Ukrainians are not a refugee. They're coming on a sponsorship model. So Ukrainians are sponsoring parolees coming here in Michigan. And it's very hard to find housing facilities. Help them to accommodate. Yes, state and government are open. So multiple programs, like Samaritas program, they open their doors and they create specific programs to help create all documents, get faster rights for work. But with housing, it's a lot of, and finding a job, and also ECL lectures, that's where we should concentrate health issues. We have to concentrate to help refugees and parolees here in Michigan. Also, for Ukraine, we have to still keep to be consistent to send medical aid. support to Ukraine. Mm-hmm. Because as for right now, after 1 year, everyone is exhausted and everyone is depleted in their funds. But we understand that in Ukraine, they have power outage, they have many displaced persons, they have devastated schools, buildings, so they are in desperate need for help. And specifically, right now, it's a winter season, so like we have to keep steady, continuous supply with using all leverage and all possibilities what we can.
Sure. Dr. Danyluk, I really want to thank you for calling in and being part of the discussion here. As I said at the open, Ukraine is in a part of the world that has real ties to here in Metro Detroit, and of course we hope that that things get better and that we're able to take care of the folks there who have been so disrupted. Thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So, Jonathan Geyer, before I have to take a break, I want to quickly get you to talk about what's next. This anniversary is tomorrow. How soon do we see things move in a better position or maybe in a worse one?
Well, I think the tragedy here is this is going to go on. One expert told me that once a war goes on for more than a year, it's likely to go upward to a decade. Mm-hmm. So,
oh my goodness.
I mean, I think is what Dr. Danyluk said, what's at stake is peace in Europe and American partners and allies. And the Biden administration has certainly said this is all about the fight for democracy. But for now, it's the fight to maintain Ukraine's sovereignty and just to dig in the trenches, because each side is preparing an offensive this spring. And it's very likely to continue to be gruesome and the human toll just really hard to fathom somewhere in Europe. I mean, of course, the U.S. has been involved in these forever wars in the Middle East and Afghanistan for two decades, but those were always a little bit at arm's length. Mm-hmm. And now we have a kind of really brutal war in Europe that's reminding us, you know, beyond the stakes in Europe, just what can the United States do to avert war?
Yeah.
I don't have the answer to that.
Yeah. Okay. Jonathan Geyer of Vox, really great to have your voice in this discussion as well. Thanks so much for joining us on Detroit Today.
Thank you, Stephen.
When we come back, we are going to talk about foreign sanctions, including their impact on this war between Russia and the Ukraine, and whether they are a good thing. We're going to have two different voices, one in favor of sanctions and maybe more, and another that believes that's not the way to pressure Russia to do the right thing. Also want to continue to hear from you on the phones and on social. 313-577-1019 is the number here, and you can go to Twitter and hashtag us as well. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today.